If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
I've been told the Netflix numbers. I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times. I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
All part of the show, man.
It is all part of the show. John Pollock and Brandon Thurston are here with you for another riveting edition of Pollock and Thurston. We have third quarter earnings to get into. Mark Shapiro is going to give us a postmortem of UFC's era on Fox. We're going to have some public records that Brandon has obtained, the bane of all these promotions' existence. And we're going to talk about Carlton the Bear getting into business with TKO.
I learned the Toronto Maple Leafs Bear today.
Yeah, we are. Not to be confused with Bernard, the business bear. Remember him?
What's Bernard the business bear from? That sounds familiar.
That was from Being the Elite.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Remember him?
No, well, but okay.
You know, when you're a franchise that is now 57 seasons and counting of a drought, you go to all avenues you can, and eventually you arrive at the doors of TKO, and we will talk about this. This landmark partnership, beyond the tunnies, the battle for Toronto might have been won yet again by the now WWE.
There is, by the way, if anybody's looking for a holiday gift for John Pollock, there are only two Toronto Maple Leafs replica belts available right now at WWE Shop.
The only place on the internet where you can find the words Toronto Maple Leafs and championship next to each other is here on WWE Shop, where for the cool price of $600, you can buy this just abhorrent piece of
while jewelry. Supplies last.
They will last. Trust me, they will last. No one in their right mind would walk around the city wearing one of these things. But
no one's going to need it to celebrate the Maple Leaf Stanley Cup victory.
No. They've already bowed out of the season. It's already a fait accompli, as they say. Well, more on this later. I need to build up the spirit to even talk about this subject matter. But by the way, Brandon, over the past week, I read a new book called This Book is All Elite, covering the history of AEW.
Oh, you got advanced copy?
No, I bought this book, okay? It's my new thing now.
It's been released then. It's out there for the public to read.
It just came out, yes. I bought this book. It is a very quick read. A lot of interesting figures in AEW interviewed for this book, including one, Chris Harrington. And you know what he was described as before he joined AEW?
Ooh, what was he described as?
An influential media member, Chris Harrington.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I did hear that there are, if you look in the index, which I've heard that there is an index, sources mm-hmm. have informed me, you will find a lot of references to Chris Harrington in the index, more than some of the biggest stars in all of AEW.
Yeah, I was trying to detect here, like it would sound, like just reading this book, like Keith Elliott Greenberg is the author of this book, mm-hmm. and like this is very much like, this is an AEW book, so it comes with that caveat. But it did feel like Chris Harrington was there to pretty much be the not the main person spoken to, like Tony Khan is interviewed for the book, but all that is to say a lot of Harrington quotes in this book.
Did Keith Elliott Greenberg ghostwrite this for Chris Harrington?
Did he ghostwrite it? No, I think these, okay. these are Chris's, in fact, words and such. But
No, I mean the whole book.
Oh, the whole book. I mean, it's kind of like trying to encompass 6 years into 200 and some odd pages. And let's just say it was a fever dream. You know, that whole brawl out situation never happened.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, that's if you go in with it, with that amnesia, you will find out or not for that matter. But anyway, influential media member. Which he was, I think so as well. So let us get into the third quarter earnings from last week. These feel ancient by this point, Brandon, these Wednesday night earnings calls. I mean, they are, really our chance for, Brandon from Lightshed Media to ask about UFC fighter pay, to find out
yes.
about, not the question I was expecting on this call, that we would get a fighter pay question about UFC, fighter purses going up.
Yes, and we got responses from Lawrence Epstein, right, saying that no specifics, but it'll be proportionate to for your pay as it is.
What does that mean, proportionate? Like the same amount that UFC increased,
proportionate,
that,
yes.
that percentage is also
our revenue will be up, and their revenue will also be up proportionately.
Proportionately. Okay.
Yes.
They made it also sound like, of course, fighter pay is going to go up. Dana said so. Dana said so.
Of course.
So of course it will go up. Like, why would it not?
No discussion of big data panel. No questions were asked about that.
That surprised me. I thought that somebody would bring that up, mainly because of like the inverse effect that so many, like the World Series has just experienced this gigantic burst of popularity. And a lot of that has been not just that it was an exciting World Series, but that out-of-home viewing has increased and the new methodology has also pumped up these numbers as well. So you're seeing a lot of these other sports properties benefiting from the new method, but this being the clear outlier. But none of that was broached on the call.
No, and I think it is a real story. It should be a real business story given how tied to media rights both of these companies are. It seems to be, we don't have that many samples at this point for UFC, but we do have weekly samples for SmackDown and NXT, and they do seem to be down in the neighborhood of 20%. So are your media rights 20% less valuable because of that? I think that's a worthy question.
What else came out of this was next year, we got the confirmation, 3 Saudi Arabia shows next year, including the Royal Rumble in January. So they ran once this year. They're going to make that up next year with 3 events. So, I mean, it remains to be seen if they're going to get any additional compensation for a show the scale of a Royal Rumble, or if your $50 million covers all events under our umbrella.
Yeah, I think that'll be something to watch for in what will be the Q1 report, which will come out probably May of next year, where if you see a huge jump, and they're putting the Saudi Arabia money now into the live events segment. It was in a different segment pre-TKO. But I think we're going to see something like, it'll be noticeable too, I think. You're going to see at least $50 million in there. That alone might not be noticeable given how regularly these events happen there. But if it's more than $50 million, I think it'll be rather noticeable if it's something on the tier of $100 million, which sounds entirely possible to me.
So for the quarter, TKO reported a WWE revenue increase of $75.8 million up to $402.1 million. This included a jump up in live events. It also This also was a quarter where WWE did outperform UFC across the board in revenue. The main differentiator that is still in UFC's favor is when it comes to partnerships and marketing, where UFC still has a sizable lead. But we're talking about like WWE at this point that had a really, really strong quarter, and UFC had one less pay-per-view this quarter as well. They're comparing to a year ago where they had that big UFC 306 show at the Sphere in Las Vegas, which was their most financially lucrative show in their in their history because of the Saudi Arabia sponsorship as well. But with WWE, it was enough that they've upped their guidance for the end of the year. Yeah, we're going to make even more.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that, so they like to talk about adjusted EBITDA, which is their way of talking about profit, although they're arbitrarily removing things. This is what we always get the non-GAAP measure warnings about. But we don't get any other profitability metric that's broken down specifically to WWE and specifically to UFC other than this magic adjusted EBITDA. And usually UFC is more profitable than WWE, but not in this quarter where you had $8 million in adjusted EBITDA for WWE and 166 for UFC.
They also, they revealed approximately $26 million of its outstanding Class A common stock had also been repurchased as part of their repurchasing program. So is Vince McMahon now out of stock? He's completely divested, right, of TKO? He has nothing to do with this company now?
No, as far as we know, he still has millions of shares. Yes, he still has there's a page on WrestleNomics.com that will tell you what the latest of what we know in terms of how much stock the major people who hold TKO stock have. And at last count, or at least what I have on here right now, is that Vince McMahon, whereas he has 3.25% of the company, which is 6.4 million shares.
All right. And if you're listening to media analyst, influential media member, John Layfield, he believes a tell-all book is coming from Vince McMahon.
I heard about that. Yes.
I don't know if this is a firsthand account that Layfield is conveying to us or what the limitations of some NDAs that are attached to Vince McMahon might have toward a tell-all book, or when he plans to sit down and write a book. Cause time is ticking, I would say, if you want to get that book out.
Yeah. I mean, his mother did live to over 100. So he could have a lot of time left.
He could have decades left to write said book. So then we get to the Q&A portion that, again, there was nothing about Big Data Plus panel, but there were questions, several regarding the Paramount Skydance deal with the UFC. A question that was asked to Nick Khan about their live event strategy, and Nick Khan kind of outlining their idea of, you know, when the merger occurred, of limiting the number of house shows to create scarcity in the market and feeling like this has been a worthwhile strategy for us that we have seen, and touting the European tour that they're about to go on in January, and that they have adjusted pricing to their tickets according to the market. The market has dictated their pricing. So don't complain to us.
Supply and demand, and people are still buying them. I know the popular narrative is that WWE's, the peak is over. The peak is over. You can see it in the attendances. People are taking pictures of empty seats at WWE events, and it's over. Hold on. Right? Does that hold up to scrutiny?
Well, you tell me. If we look now, I would say a fair representation of WWE's popularity would be extracting these Cena shows that are coming up, because I think those are going to greatly enhance things. Like, this past Monday was a phenomenal success in Boston. I think they sold 5 million t-shirts with John Cena's colors. We're going to see next Monday. I'm going to guess, Brandon, that Monday could be the second largest arena event that this company has ever put on, behind the Netflix Raw in January. Like, they are going to do an unreal gate on Monday at the Garden.
I mean, based on what you saw.
And then you've got Washington, D.C. that might even top Madison Square Garden. It probably will. So, we're going to see some extraordinary figures that are really going to push back on the idea that their live event numbers are sagging.
So if I look at every market-to-market comparison that we have just for Raw and SmackDown going. So this is, I don't know how many that we have here. If you exclude the ones in Australia, we've got about 14 of them. I'm not showing them on the screen right now, but we've got three of them that are positive, including the most recent Boston Raw, which was up 50% from last year because they did
no, the last one they just ran. They did a SmackDown in Boston in August, and they came back with this in, like, double check me on that, but I'm pretty sure they ran Boston.
I have the last Raw they did here.
Okay,
so we're even dealing with the same day of the week.
Yes. Okay. Looking at that, because there was a SmackDown in August, so it's not, and AEW is running Boston next week as well. So you look at that market, it's certainly one, like, it was a really big success on Monday is what I'm getting around to stating.
Yes, yes. But there are not favorable market-to-market comparisons in let's say, here's how many, six plus, what we say, eight, four, in 14 cases where we have market-to-market comparisons, actually 12 cases where we have market-to-market comparisons, only three of them are positive. In the last 12 market-to-market comparisons we have, only three of them are positive, which is consistent with, it's plateauing, I would say, right? And if we look at now what we are looking at on the screen here is Raw still looks strong on average. Now it's being helped by this, you know, for example, this really strong Boston Raw, but you do see SmackDown taking a plunge here so far in Q4, and we're almost halfway through Q4 here, halfway through November, and SmackDown is way down to a level that it's not been at since really the return from the pandemic. So it's something to watch going forward. And you know what people may be talking about too is sort of looking forward at the advances here. And we're not taking into account any of the advances here in any of the information that I just said. Mm-hmm. If advances look weak and are actually going to be weak when it's all said and done, yeah, that would support the truth of the plateau for live events for attendance being there. But if you've got, even if you've got half the audience, you're at least doubling ticket prices, so you're making even more money.
Yeah, that's the X factor that we are not seeing, is the gate performance for a lot of these shows, that if we're just comparing attendance, it's not it's just not a fully rounded picture of the health of some of these shows and what they're making off of them, even if there are, in fact, lesser people. But, I mean, if we are looking at the advances, like, certainly the post-Christmas set of house shows, which now, like, this is pretty much the only domestic tour of the year they're doing at this point. It's notable markets, but it's nothing that, I'm seeing nothing here that has even hit 6,000 at this point. And quite frankly, I think a lot of fans are in tune with the fact that if you want to go to a show, it's probably your best serve to wait until closer to the show to see if prices go down. Like, I think there is a certain savviness to that. But the big shows are still going to perform well, as we can see with, like, the Survivor Series coming up and with a lot of these Raw shows, especially the Cena ones, where there is gigantic demand at gigantic prices for.
Well, that's why we need the Fed to adjust interest rates so that people can start taking out loans, so that they can start, financially planning in the right way so that they can afford to go to these events.
You have pulled a clip of Nick Khan and Mark Shapiro. What are they discussing here?
They're being asked by an analyst about what's the relationship been like so far between WWE and ESPN. Have the events, the PLEs, performed in the way that you expected them to? What are some of the highlights?
Yeah, how have these first couple PLEs performed relative to your expectations, and what's standing out to you so far in terms of the potential benefits of that partnership?
Great. So, by the way, we're thrilled with the start of it. So it's obviously a new product. It's a new platform. If you noticed any of the promotion going into our first event with them, Wrestlepalooza, which is a new event for us, which we're really pleased with, you saw wall-to-wall coverage on all ESPN platforms. It's going to take time for ESPN to grow that platform the way that they want to grow it. We're patient. We'll continue to put on our product the way that we think only we can do.
It's extremely important to us, and we're watching like everybody else, to see that as they renew a lot of their distribution partner deals, that they get the ability to authenticate for free. So, ESPN D2C, if you're a so-and-so subscriber, you know, I'm not going to get into, you know, who has it and who doesn't. You know, some of these folks can just authenticate and they get the D2C partnership for free. So you just carry the app, and others are paying $29.99. And it's their goal, of course, to redo all their transmission deals and get these consents. And we're anxious to see that happen. YouTube TV is a prime example of that.
So let me do my best to translate that.
Translate
Brandon,
that.
Brandon, you correct me if you feel the need to. We want to be marketed 24/7 by the ESPN machine that we know they are capable of. And we don't get a dime from this $29.99 extra for the app. So we want everybody to get this app for free. Exactly. Yeah. We benefit by nothing by this paywall that only benefits ESPN and not us. That is just a further inhibitor for our audience to get our product that we are not profiting off of.
Would you say that there was some, as much as an executive of a big publicly traded company can, there's some discomfort expressed there?
I could easily read between the lines there. I think they were ecstatic about all the promotion, the on the ground Sports Center coverage they got for WrestlePalooza. I think they viewed at WrestlePalooza as this is the coverage we expect. And I would take that to mean I don't think we have seen anything close to that since for the recent Crown Jewel show. Granted, that was a show in Australia, not exactly an easy location and a time zone that it was airing in. But I'm sure they're looking at Survivor Series, like that's our next big show. And we want to see like the ESPN muscle here. And I think there's also like it was very clear that in that week leading up to WrestlePalooza, like WWE realized that this whole ESPN Unlimited app, there's a lot of our fans that are not going to be aware that they do not get this necessarily with their ESPN subscription if they don't have the right provider. And I think that they just want to make this as seamless as possible for their audience to get their shows. So I could definitely read that from these responses. Like this early in the relationship, you can certainly detect like this is the early days of the app. We know this is not going to be the end result. It's still in a growth phase.
Right. And what we're showing on the screen here is there's at least half of the United States pay TV universe doesn't have access to this, despite having access to the traditional ESPN channel. Well, actually, I, as a YouTube TV subscriber, don't have access to the ESPN channel at the moment because Disney and YouTube TV are still in negotiations to renew their deal, which has expired. But more than half of the pay TV universe doesn't have access to this. Now, you could just, if you're not a cable subscriber, sign up for $30, get access to all the ESPN live channels, and you get access to the ESPN the broadcasts of the WPLEs as well. But, you know, this has got to be, this, you know, WrestlePalooza and Crown Jewel must have been, I have to think, the least watched WWE premium live events in years, because up until now they've been on Peacock with Peacock's 30 million US homes, with even before that probably WWE Network, which was in, you know, just under I think 1.3 million homes, I think is where it ended up at the end. So I have to think that this was the viewership for them has been pretty low of late. But the thing is, this was kind of a self-inflicted problem. They decided to start this deal early rather than wait until, you know, maybe WrestleMania of next year, when deals with YouTube TV and Comcast probably would have been renewed, maybe with, you know, including access to this app. So to roll this thing out with such an incomplete coverage of the United States cable universe covered, I'm sure ESPN's leading the decision making there, but that was a self-selected problem.
Yeah, and it was casually mentioned, I think, by Andrew Schleimer that there was some cost that they had to incur getting out of the Peacock deal, although they didn't get specific on what that was. But I'm sure that was more than offset by the fact that they are now entering this ESPN deal so many months early that you would think like that's at least a wash. But it doesn't sound like they were, like Peacock just gave their blessing and let them go. Like, obviously there was something involved, and you still do have this relationship with Peacock through March for the NXT shows and for the library content.
And always for Saturday night's main event. Now that those aren't being simulcast on NBC, which is probably an underanalyzed change there, no longer on broadcast.
Which would also add, probably, I would say very confidently, the least watched Saturday night's main event of this current run of the events since they brought them back last December. And again, like, you look at the argument that they are touting the fact that UFC is going to have several windows on broadcast television. And yet for the Saturday night's main event property, it's like, it's the opposite. We are losing that broadcast window to go streaming only. And I think, like, this most recent show on November 1st, I think it would very clearly have the least amount of eyes on it. And I think December will kind of be an anomaly because you have a massive attraction in Cena's retirement for that show.
Which, I mean, unless they send out a press release, we'll never know what the viewership was.
Yeah. What, as a YouTube TV subscriber, if you wanted to get ESPN right now, what are your options? Like, would you?
I could sign up for the ESPN app for $29.99 a month.
Right. So that would be the alternative here.
Or I could cancel my YouTube TV subscription. They did give me a credit. So they did offer all customers a $20 credit for the month. And I have invoked that. You do have to opt in, though.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like they're saying, like, this has been like the longest carriage dispute that has happened at this point, because you have both sides that have, at least in theory, leverage over the other that has led to this stalemate.
Yeah. And we don't even know, will authentication into the ESPN app that will give you WWE access, will that even be part of the deal? That remains to be seen.
It's November, which means holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds that you won't see anywhere else. Their thoughtful curation makes shopping simple. But heads up, popular gifts sell fast, so now's a great time to start crossing those names off of your list. Uncommon Goods offers high-quality, unique items, like the New York Times custom baseball book, a made-to-order collection of historic newspaper pages featuring your favorite team's biggest games, star players, and memorable moments straight from the Times archives. You can even personalize it with a name for that extra special touch. Perfect for that baseball fan who might still need a bit of cheering up from their team's heartbreaking World Series Game 7 loss. Uncommon Goods has something for every kind of person. Book lovers, history buffs, foodies, gardeners. Shopping there supports small makers crafting limited-run handcrafted products. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. For 15% off your next gift, head to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Rewind Away looks at some of the biggest retirement matches in wrestling history, featuring matches involving Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Sting, and Tam Nakano. Plus, John Pollock and Brandon from New Jersey get together to look back at season 4 of 90210, a season that brought you John Sears, Lucinda Nicholson, David's meth addiction, and Brandon moving in on Kelly Taylor. Book Club will cover This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Plus, we have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322, and so much more. $6 gets you all this at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Well, that was the third quarter earnings. Was there anything else that came out of the call that stood out to you or was of value here before we move on?
I think we covered it. I know you were outraged about Mark Shapiro's comments about the Netflix rankings. They were number one in how many countries? I think he meant to say ranked. He should have said ranked, right?
No, he said it's one. You follow the raw viewership. I mean, when you're number one in 29 to 30 countries weekly. So
are they top 10 in 29 to 30 countries though?
No, they're not. They're not top 10 in 29 to 30. This past, we just got the numbers from last week. For instance, they were top 10 in 9 countries. None were they ranked number one. Now, the most I will give him is that if you look on a Tuesday, there are select countries where Raw will be number one for the day on Tuesday. but it's not 29 to 30 countries, and it's not a, like, we're not looking here at, like, I don't think that's a reasonable definition of being ranked if we're talking for the day of a Tuesday.
Top 10 in nine countries is the most recent episode.
Exactly. And they were not number one in any of these countries at all. Nor has this, like, I would venture to guess that even for that first Raw, they were not number one in half that number of countries. And that was by leaps and bounds the most watched Raw on Netflix, was that January 6th show.
Yeah.
But he was really taken to task for that statement, though. They fact checked him.
Yeah, they fact checked him immediately. The analysts followed up. I tuned out at that point, though.
All right. Well, there you go. Those were our third quarter earnings results to go through. So let us move on. And we have now to discuss some more from Mark Shapiro. And he spoke with Andrew Marchand from the main event. And he spoke about the UFC's relationship back on Fox. So this was transcribed over at Fightful by the great Andrew Thompson. And Shapiro said, "So when it came to the first ESPN deal, we were on Fox with UFC. And frankly, Fox was having a tough time monetizing it because the UFC in those days was hard to monetize, right? Combat sports, blood on the mat, wasn't as mainstream as it is today. Didn't do the kind of numbers, was still in the building phase. And I would argue Fox was a little lazy." Now, I will add the fact that the first Fox broadcast in 2011, okay, the Stone Ages by Mark Shapiro's definition, that did a larger audience than like any free over-the-air broadcast UFC has done. So it wasn't a case of like, you know, you and your two friends watching UFC back in the day. Anyway, he says it takes work to sell UFC, especially in those days. When I was with ESPN, I would get on top of my sales guys. "Don't tell me you're selling SportsCenter. That's total bullshit. SportsCenter sells itself. Hello? That's the sell of SportsCenter. Everybody wants SportsCenter. Tell me how you're selling hunting. Tell me how you're selling fishing. In those days, how are you selling Major League Soccer? Tell me how you're selling tennis, golf, ATB. That stuff's hard. NFL? Come on. Those are premiums. It's how high you can get. It's when you strike, when the CPMs are. How you create a supply and demand market. That's a whole different story. So for us, Fox really wasn't aggressive, or didn't know how to package it, or didn't have enough sports, didn't have the right strategy, or didn't put the effort in, or had a bad sales team. I don't know what to tell you, but they weren't selling it well. So they came to us and said, we want to renew because the demos had been great for us, but we want to take down the rights fee. Go south. Well, now we have to create a market because we're obviously not going back to Fox." Did he flush the toilet after urinating all over Fox here? Oh my goodness. That's about as hard hitting a statement as Mark Shapiro has provided. So I'm sure he hopes Fox will not be up for any future rounds of negotiations after they just, man, ream the sales staff.
I guess we do know the numbers behind. I think we have a good impression of the numbers behind why SmackDown did not stay on Fox. But I suppose no major existing partnership with Fox outside of I can think of Evolve on Tubi. Nothing in the way of nothing causing him to hold back there.
No. But I don't know. That sounds like a statement. Like all our rights are now set for the next number of years, and we don't. I don't think he's saying this 18 months ago. Would be my thought.
No.
But I mean, that was like the story, like specific to WWE. It was like that was basically it was Lachlan Murdoch who stated on one of those investors calls. The fact that just at this price, they were paying, it was an average annual value of $205 million that they were spending on SmackDown. And WWE wanted an increase, and it just did not make sense to them. And thus they went over to the USA Network, where they did get a nominal increase. It's like
287 it was announced at. I think it's more than that now. I think we even have that claim that it's more than that now, because fortunately for you, half of the year is 3 hours.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that extra hour. Do we think that the SmackDown is paying for itself on USA?
Well, it's very different in the case of a cable channel versus a broadcast channel, right? Where is where it's not just ads that you're justifying this against, not just marketing value of cross promoting different products, different TV shows on W programming, but it's also the carriage fee, right? Because when you're Fox and you're already carrying the NFL and Major League Baseball and whatever other sports they're carrying, W is probably not contributing anything to your carriage fee that you're charging carriers like YouTube TV and Comcast and Spectrum. But when you're the USA Network, what's USA Network's number one show? I mean, they don't have the NFL or the MLB. USA Network's number one show by far is SmackDown. And if you're, and they are, if you're charging carriers, you know, a $1, $2, $3 per subscriber fee to have USA on your cable system, what's justifying that? Probably what's your number one show by far, which is SmackDown, or before that was Raw.
And we should mention that the deal with NBC Universal, when they announced it with the 5-year deal with SmackDown, also included the quarterly Saturday night's main event specials, which were going, yes, to be simulcast and were up until this past November 1st show that was moved to Peacock. And one has to surmise that the show in July that did go on the same day as All in Texas, there was also an NXT show that day and had the Goldberg retirement. It was slightly down from the May show, but was their least performing of the four up until that point.
I'm sure ratings were a factor there. If they were doing 4 or 5 million viewers, maybe that's still happening on NBC, but they probably have calculated, you know, they want to get out of this deal early to put the PLEs on ESPN. And maybe we don't need, maybe we can put something more profitable for ourselves for NBC, on Saturday nights rather than this show that's doing, you know, what was it doing? Just under 2 million viewers, I think.
Yeah. And I think it was a combination of factors that you outlined there. I think as well, it was a fear of their WWE audience dropping Peacock once the ESPN deal got a leg up and got to move there. It's like, are people going to hold on to this service just for NXT, PLEs, and for the library? We add one more exclusive, and hopefully there's more of that retention that Peacock can hold on to.
And I think in the case of broadcast, I mean, we don't have comments from people at NBC saying this, but we do in the case of Fox. I think there is the theory that, well, you know, look at what SmackDown was doing on USA. When they moved to Fox, they're going to do so much better. But they did incrementally better because they had wider reach. But it's not as if, oh, because they were on Fox and because we cross-promoted them on the NFL and NASCAR and whatever else, that WWE became more popular because of it. And that all that the flywheel effect just caused SmackDown to have an even bigger audience than it would have had if all other things were equal. Now, that didn't really happen. Now, granted, we could argue that the creative was a problem at that time from 2019 and until just before this deal ended. And maybe something similar has happened to here with Saturday Night's main event. You could make the argument, tell yourself the story in advance of that deal going into effect, that once we get on NBC and we have we have NBC promoting us across Sunday Night Football or whatever it is, that we're going to do such great viewership. We're going to be in so many more homes with this thing. This is going to be such a big deal, just like it was a huge deal in the 80s. And it was okay.
So here's a question. We know that the Peacock deal comes up in March and, you know, maybe they renew, maybe they don't. But do you think they look at this idea, again, with keeping WWE fans that signed up for Peacock with this service, the idea of a third hour of SmackDown, is that third hour more valuable as a Peacock exclusive come the new year?
I don't think they're going to do that to cause people to switch over. We haven't seen that experimented with. And so let's think here, because I'm losing track. What's going to expire in March? They've already ended the PLE deal, which is now being carried.
The NXT PLEs run there until March.
The NXT PLEs, the library.
And the library.
That's what will be up for renewal.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And you're talking about putting a third hour of SmackDown exclusively on Peacock.
I'm saying, like, let's just game this out, that they lose those two properties on Peacock. Like, what is the incentive for you, the WWE fan, to keep Peacock? Because all that's there at that point is Saturday night's main event 4 times a year. Is that going to be enough that people are going to stay signed up to this service for if you just signed up for WWE content?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's incentive to renew the library.
He had more to say with Andrew Marchand. He said that regarding TKO, they're open to new ideas. They never seemed exhausted. They're ready to take on a new shot, a new risk, a new opportunity. Hey, Nick, let's talk about launching a new event right now. I think he's talking here about ESPN with TKO.
Yes.
Right now, a lot of our PLEs were created by Vince McMahon. We need to get in the business of taking that torch and moving past that. And Nick and Triple H created WrestlePalooza. Sir, if I may disagree half-heartedly, that WrestlePalooza was my IP, which is the launch event for our new ESPN deal, which did incredibly well and may turn into a, wait for it, super franchise. Not to mention, from a merch standpoint, I don't need to tell you, securing the IP rights and then selling merch at WrestlePalooza, let's just say it was a real winner. I don't know about you, Brandon, but when I go to the mall, I am just inundated with WrestlePalooza shirts. I just see it constantly.
Yeah, it's been huge. It was definitely on the bug on a lot of things I was watching on ESPN.
How did you take this?
It means all of the WWE brands that you love and know are going away because TKO has come to ruin and change everything. WrestleMania is going away.
I was going to say, I'm going to hold my breath for them to decide that, you know what, WrestleMania, we can do better than that. Let's move past that.
Royal Rumble, that's old hat.
There is not one name.
That's not what they're saying. That's not what he's saying.
No, there is no name that you could come up with right now that a fan is spending money because of the name for. Like, literally none. You do have existing names that people are actually bought. Like, WrestleMania tickets can go on sale right now without any announcement, and you know how that's going to perform. The Royal Rumble, you are going to know how that's going to perform. You have that, I think, to a degree with SummerSlam, maybe less so Survivor Series. But regardless, like, there's very valuable legacy IP that WWE has. And
yeah, I think WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Money in the Bank, those all have strong brand value. Now, do any others? I don't think so.
I don't know if WrestlePalooza is going to be.
Mark is committed to it, though. He's committed to making WrestlePalooza a thing.
Well, they really love this name. So, I mean, what else? Do you think that...
Is Paul Heyman getting extra royalties for this?
Yes. Do you think we'll get Barely Legal? Will that be a new event? I don't think so.
I don't expect that. No.
From the marketing genius in 1997. All right. On to some local news for yours truly. WWE and Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. Two entities that I cannot be happier that are now in bed together. One of the world's premier sports and entertainment companies today announced a new long-term strategic partnership. I always love that they have to qualify every partnership as strategic.
Yes. Thank God.
Like this is a totally brain dead idea that we came up with. We have no foresight here coming up. It's a strategic one. Bringing together two iconic global enterprises, the partnership will explore opportunities across multiple areas, including exclusive merchandise collaborations, original content development, community focused programs, and regular cross brand appearances from team players and WWE superstars. Additionally, Monday Night Raw returns to MLSE's Scotiabank Arena in Toronto, Monday, January 26, 2026. Superstars will make appearances at Toronto Maple Leafs games on Sunday and Tuesday that week, with Toronto sports personalities also in attendance at Monday Night Raw, which will air live on Netflix around the world. I will caveat that. I do not qualify as a Toronto sports personality. And yes, tickets will go on sale next Friday for this event. So, it's time for our weekly segment. What does this mean for AEW?
What does this mean for AEW? Does this mean AEW is locked out of Toronto for good?
They might be Jim Crockett, and this is 1984.
We were discussing this earlier. They could, so this, what is this acronym? MLSE, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. They operate Scotiabank, which is where...
the former Air Canada Center, where the Maple Leafs and Raptors play.
And where
AEW has staged
Forbidden Door and All Out recently.
Yes, they were just there for All Out.
So that's where the Maple Leafs play. But also they own Rico Coliseum, which is now called Coca-Cola Coliseum, which is where WWE would do house shows at. I think didn't AEW run a TV?
AEW did their first TVs here. They did a back-to-back Dynamite and Was it Rampage? They might have done Rampage, actually. Regardless, yes, AEW, their first time to the city, ran Rico.
Now, there's nothing in here that says exclusive. There's no exclusive in this press release.
Exclusive merchandise collaboration.
Exclusive merchandise, excuse me.
We're not going to have any bootleggers here on this deal.
But they're not volunteering that they have an exclusive pro wrestling venue agreement. But whether or not that's explicit in that agreement or not, you could see it could be harder for AEW to book either of those venues in Toronto that they've booked in the past.
I think that that's a near guarantee that AEW will not be running these venues any longer. And that does
that sounds like it's worthy of an antitrust question.
It's worth a question, but I think we operate in industries, Brandon, that have lots of questions that don't really get there's not a whole lot of dissecting that goes into these questions, and they just exist. And perhaps like this is a fairly obviously this is like, what would you equate this to? Like, maybe the deal in Indianapolis, to a degree, that they've got such a partnership with a location and buildings in one specific geographic area that I would imagine that WWE is going to be running a lot more shows in Toronto. And if they're coming every 6 months or so, I'm sure like that's going to be their argument, is that, hey, we have a certain lock on the building, and we do not like we know that these things exist where you cannot promote another event within X amount of days of a WWE running said venue that we've. You know, WWE comes to a town, the show finishes, and then they can announce when AEW is coming. So I would imagine it's explicitly in the language here, but I would be somewhat surprised if we see either of these buildings being leased out to AEW.
Well, we did discuss, earlier today that Maple Leaf Gardens is still available, right? And in fact, probably has a capacity that's more appropriate for AEW other than pay-per-views.
Yes.
Rogers Center is always available, owned by Rogers Communications, right?
Could easily host a collision taping.
Maybe you do All In Toronto. It'll be on one of these years. Yes.
Those are your look at, like, realistically, Rogers Center would have to be a massive, massive undertaking for AEW. That
could be All In. Yeah.
And then the other ones are like going like somewhat outside of the city. If you want to go to a Mississauga or somewhere that is just outside of the downtown area.
They've run Hamilton in the past.
That's right. Yeah. The long-term partnership builds on the existing launch of exclusive licensed legacy title belts with the Toronto Maple Leafs and Toronto Raptors, featuring each team's iconic colors and official branding. So there you have it. Iconic.
Looks pretty iconic to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a rarity to see gold and attached to the Toronto Maple Leafs logo. So yeah, cannot wait for this this partnership. Really, really linking up with the hot sports brand in Toronto these days. Maybe AEW can strike a strategic deal with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah. I've said many times here, like, I think it's something to continue to think about and monitor about whether there's an antitrust case building here specifically for AEW against WWE, which is, you've got a track record of this parent company having antitrust issues.
Janelle Grant and Dr. Carlin Kolker. The slowest moving story in professional wrestling.
Yes.
We do not have a lawsuit. We have indications.
Action.
Yes. So the latest, as Brandon reported this week, is that Janelle Grant's attorneys are arguing that Dr. Carlin Kolker accessed her records back on July 27th, 2023. Now, that statement alone, Brandon, why is that a news story?
Because WWE told us a few weeks later that I'm going to find the exact excerpt here. WWE itself told us it's required to tell us certain things under its legal proceedings and its SEC filings. And it had a quarterly report a few weeks, I think it was August 3rd or something like that, 2023, where they told us. On July 17th, 2023, federal law enforcement agents executed a search warrant and served a federal grand jury subpoena on Mr. Vince McMahon. No charges have been brought in these investigations. No charges to this date have ever been brought against Vince McMahon related to sexual misconduct allegations. But there was, Now, people have said that they raided his house. I don't know that they raided his house. Maybe they did, but they executed some sort of search on Vince McMahon at that time. And here we have, according to Grant's attorneys, she's saying that according to metadata that they have related to her medical files, now, you know, more than a year after Janelle Grant stopped going to get treatment at Peak Wellness, he opened her medical file for some reason.
What do we think that reason could be?
I think they, you know, it leaves open the question, well, did he change something?
Maybe he got like, maybe there was a spelling mistake. Maybe he just had like a new AI tool to like go through. He just wanted to make some corrections.
Now, if I were defending Dr. Kolker, I'd say, well, he heard the news or heard from someone somewhere that there was a, you know, search happening, or that he knows about the allegations involving Vince. Certainly by that point, those are a year old at that point. Maybe he just went in there to check to see what was going on with their treatment to make sure, you know, just to remind himself of what that situation was. Doesn't mean he changed anything.
There may not have been anything nefarious about this. Exactly. And that would be on, you know, Janelle Grant's team to be able to prove that there was something nefariously done. Like, it is not illegal to check a patient's records. But again, this has been a very slow moving story. I don't know what the end result is going to be, but there's been a lot of waiting involving all of these cases surrounding Janelle Grant until
this is not a lawsuit. This is a separate case from the federal lawsuit against Vince and WWE. This is just a case. This is not a lawsuit. In fact, it is a pre-suit action just to get evidence, including medical records. Janelle Grant wants a lot of other things that she has not gotten yet, that is largely being litigated. What else does she get? And she's claiming that there are inconsistencies in these medical records. She still wants billing information that she says Kolker has that he has not given her yet, because she wants to know how her medical treatment was paid for. She says she never paid for any of it and that Vince paid for it. She wants to know if WWE accounts were used for that or if Vince's personal accounts were used for that. She wants travel logs involving travel that Dr. Kolker and Vince may have taken. That's what's being litigated here. And Kolker says, we're all done. We've given you everything you want. And Grant says, no, the judges ordered you to give us more. So that's where we're at.
It will all be covered in Vince McMahon's tell-all book.
Hopefully.
Which he may or may not be working on. TNA Bound for Glory. It went down on October the 12th in Lowell, Massachusetts at the Songus Center. And what did my co-host think immediately when he heard Songus Center? Wait a minute. Is that a public building? Oh, yes, it is, folks. And therefore, we get this. Documents released to WrestleNomics by the University of Massachusetts Lowell, which owns the Songus Center, show different numbers than TNA's announced attendance of 7,794. A report from the venue operator, Oakview Group, lists 5,554 tickets sold. The turnstile count was 6,137. The same report called the event, quote, a great success, and noted that food and beverage sales ranked among the highest in the arena's history. You know, you had to be properly fed and drunk for one final table between the Hardys and Team 3D. You also reached out to Ross Foreman of TNA, yes, who stated that the announced crowd was, quote, verified by the venue management team at the Songus Center. And he went on to explain that how they arrived at 7,794. He said that beyond our ticketed attendees, we also had many seats and standing room only occupied by TNA credentialed guests, media, staff, VIPs, and other groups that brought the attendance to 7,794, which I think you're kind of burying the lead that there were 2,200 guests, media, and visitors, friends of TNA. That's a lot of people. I don't even follow that many people on Blue Sky.
Yes. So this is what they announced as their North American attendance record. I take it they have a UK number that's bigger than this.
They did Wembley Arena, which I believe is the all-time attendance record. And then this slightly outdoes their Slammiversary number that they just did back in July.
So according to TNA, this sets the record. It breaks the record that was just set, according to them, in July on Long Island. At UBS Arena for Slammiversary, where they say they did 7,623. They say this did 7,794. lots of consternation about how legitimate this number was. So you look up the Gonzaga Center and you find that, oh, it's what's a UMass, University of Massachusetts building. Perhaps it's subject to records request. So I sent the records request. Shall I walk you through the entire public records request process?
A through Z.
Okay. So I send the email. I send the request out. You look at the Massachusetts law, and it says you have, I believe it is 10 business days to respond. Got no response. Sent a follow-up email the day after that deadline had passed and said, hey, I'm paraphrasing here, what's the deal? And I think a day or two later, I do get a response from someone representing UMass Lowell, who says, yeah, there's this Oakview group that that is a contractor for us that operates the venue for us. So they're probably not subject to public records law. And I say, oh, I've read the law, and I think that they are. So a week goes by, and I get nothing new from UMass Lowell. So I send an appeal to the Secretary of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts saying, hey, help me out here. Hours later, they say, hey, UMass Lowell, what's the deal here? And minutes later, I think, I get this document that we have included in the report about this event that shows, as you probably just went over here, paid attendance was 5,554. The gate was over $390,000. The turnstile count was 6,000.
Which I'll say is a great, great gate figure for TNA.
Yes, both the venue and TNA did seem to get on the same page and told me that there were another 243 premium additional seats that they don't necessarily say were filled, but they were there. Maybe all of them were filled. I don't know. So we do get up to 7,000. We get up to a few hundred more that way. You know, suffice to say, I wish I was around 1987 so I could clear up this WrestleMania 3 controversy, but it would be helpful if in their press releases, these wrestling companies, when they announce a major attendance record, would say exactly what would say, you know, are we talking about tickets sold? I mean, to AEW's credit, they did say this is a paid attendance, 81,035 for all in. To go off on a tangent here, I did ask Tony Khan ahead of All In 2023, will you give us the ticket audit report? He did not directly answer my question. But just, you know, being more transparent about what exactly the number is, I'm sure it's irritating when I come along and do these sorts of reports. But if they would just be more transparent about what exactly it is, it would avoid, you know, the way that people grab a hold of information like this to serve whatever narrative they want to serve. But we do want to know, well, how many tickets were actually sold for this event? Because that is the indicator of economic interest, of fan interest. 5,554 tickets were sold, maybe a couple hundred more.
Yeah. This is at its core, folks. This is a branding exercise by these promotions. And first of all, 5,554 tickets sold and a $390,000 gate are tremendous figures for TNA. Those alone would be generally applauded, I think, if TNA had announced that. But given, like, yeah, that's tickets sold. There's going to be more people, in theory, like the turnstile count was slightly larger. But in the absence of, like, we have no TNA television ratings. We have, like, we will not get a pay-per-view number for this show. So really, what are you to go on TNA? Like, they have this narrative at the moment that this is an upswing for the company, that this partnership with WWE has benefited them greatly. And if we are able to project a higher attendance than the last high attendance that we did, it is an overall tone of this company is on the increase, and it just keeps growing and growing. And hey, we're also in the midst of television negotiations that Carlos Silva has disclosed that they are very close to finalizing. So this is a branding exercise that I think, quite honestly, they believe that they can project this and no one's going to go and unearth these numbers. That, like, to me, there was no evidence to the contrary beyond these public records that you were able to produce. So all I would say is I hope no performers got a 7794 tattooed on their arm.
No, I don't think they did. Although we haven't checked with Moose about that, who was rejecting speculation online, I think in the day or night that was following this event about people claiming that, well, it must have all been comped. I do think this mitigates some of that, right? Like, it's not like half of this crowd is comped.
Wait a minute. Ross Forman is basically saying 2,000 of these numbers were comped.
I suppose. Well, it's not like half.
No, it's not half, 5,000. But I mean, yeah. We know what the tickets sold are, and Ross Forman is claiming this, 77.94. Okay, we'll take that at its word. That's a difference of 2,200 people.
Yeah, true enough.
So there you go. Like, it's still a very impressive event for TNA that they did. 5,500 paid for TNA. I wouldn't have guessed that a year ago that they could achieve, much less a gate of $400,000. Like, those are very impressive business metrics for a TNA that, despite the optimism out there, are not the number two company in North America, and that they're achieving that. I think that's a great success for them.
Yeah. Now, what I was told by TNA that they verified this number with the venue operator. Then the venue operator told me that they provided reports and information to TNA, and then TNA makes this announcement themselves. Otherwise, these two entities are on the same page as far as messaging, although TNA seemed to want to lean on the venue as being with them on that specific announced number, whereas the venue said, well, that was their messaging. But they were very happy with this too. So yeah, go ahead.
Last week we had the introduction of the AEW National Championship. It was met with a great, great fanfare. It's about time that we have a new championship introduced in AEW. And if you listen to MVP's promo, he went over past holders of the national championship, mentioning Wahoo McDaniel and when Nikita Koloff unified the belt. So using the lineage of the old NWA national title, does everyone remember the NWA national title? Because if you are following Billy Corgan's group, Mike Mondo is your current NWA national champion. And hearkening back to the days of Ric Flair leaving WCW with the big gold belt, we have a belt dispute between the NWA and AEW. But you have noted the fact that there is another dispute that is going on between these two companies when it comes to a proposed name of a show that AEW was shopping around.
Yes. So to be clear here, right, they're obviously, you know, NWA was unhappy about this AEW national title.
That's the Songus Center on the phone.
About this AEW national title being rolled out, because they have a title, which more legitimately, to say the least, goes back to the real lineage of what they're claiming here as far as the title that was on Georgia Championship Wrestling in 1986 and so forth. And remember AEW Shockwave that was coming soon to Fox, rumoredly. That show has not materialized. So, but in advance of that, in advance of those rumors, and the reason why those rumors became known and became speculated about was because AEW filed a trademark, which anybody can see for themselves publicly whenever anybody applies for a trademark. They did for a new TV program, and then reports started to come out saying, oh, they've applied for this new trademark. What does that mean? And clearly NWA took notice of that too. Now NWA had run something called Shockwave back in December 2020 and said, Shockwave, you can't trademark Shockwave. We've already used it. Now, NWA had not trademarked it up to that point, but had used the name. So filed for the trademark themselves saying, yep, we've already used this. AEW filed a kind of trademark application that says, I haven't used it yet, but I'm planning to. And NWA was able to apply for a trademark that says, I'm already using this IP. Here are some screenshots from my YouTube channel showing me using this IP. And they were able to actually get that trademark registered. The AEW application for AEW Shockwave is not dead. It's still living because this is being litigated at the trademark law level. This is not like a federal lawsuit or a state level lawsuit. This is just a dispute within the USPTO world at this point. And that's where it's at. There is no, let's be really clear too, there is no trademark dispute over national championship belt for wrestling. And I think it would be, I'm not a lawyer, of course, but I think it would be nearly impossible to file such a trademark because it's not like, I was thinking of an analogy. Like, can you trademark a belt, a wrestling championship title name? I bet New Japan could trademark the New Japan Strong title, because that has something to do with their intellectual property, right? But to just try to trademark the word national championship title is so sort of generic and what they call descriptive, as opposed to distinct, that it'll be really hard. And it's not like they're the only ones who are using the national title name. Go look on Cage Match. I'm sure you can find dozens of national titles that have been used over the decades. So it would be really hard to enforce or even register, I think. So there's no dispute here about national title. What there is a dispute about is calling a wrestling program Shockwave. And that's not resolved. It's probably not going to be resolved for like a year.
Well, maybe Fox should have got the
right. And this is why they're not on Fox, right? No, it's not why they're not on Fox. They could have called it AEW, whatever they want. But you know, they're just facing a trademark challenge as regards to Shockwave.
They're not on Fox because they're lazy. Is that the answer? Fox is just too lazy. According to Mark Shapiro.
If you listen to Mark Shapiro, you know.
And we finish off the legal filings. The nightmare is over. Is this correct, Brandon? The American nightmare is officially, it has been officially ruled upon, or at least settled, we should say.
Our long American nightmare has come to an end.
The long roads.
As Wesley Isold, who is a hardcore punk musician, people have to remind me. He's best known, I believe, for being the leader of a band called Cold Cave, but he also is the leader of a band before that called American Nightmare. And when Cody Rhodes decided to trademark the name American Nightmare for wrestling purposes, he too faced a trademark challenge, and it resulted in a settlement in 2021 between Cody and Wesley Isold, where they said, all right, Cody's going to give Wesley Isold, I believe it's $30,000 in cash, and he's going to agree that when he uses the American Nightmare name, he's going to be very careful to be clear that when he's using it on apparel in particular, he's going to make it really clear that this is wrestling-related American Nightmare, not anything else, so that there is no confusion in the marketplace about his merchandise being merchandise for the band American Nightmare. So that was their settlement agreement in 2021, and Wesley Isold had filed a lawsuit because he apparently had looked on W Shop and saw a lot of merchandise in W Shop with the American Nightmare text on it that did not meet the terms of their agreement. It's supposed to have the Cody Rhodes name next to the text. It's supposed to have the Cody Rhodes likeness, or it's supposed to have wrestling indicia, some sort of wrestling imagery that's at least 75% the size of the American Nightmare text, to make it clear to everybody that this is not an American Nightmare music band shirt or hat or whatever. So they this is over a year old. I believe it's September 2024 when this lawsuit was filed. But they've come to a settlement. We don't know what the settlement terms are.
Well, we look forward to Cody Rhodes expanding his repertoire to include maybe the Cold Cave Cody Cutter, or a new submission hold called the Ice Hold. We'll see. Maybe there'll be a burgeoning partnership. Maybe Wesley Isold gets to play at WrestleMania next year.
We did we did reach out to all the lawyers that represent all the parties in here. Fanatics, by the way, was a defendant, as well as WWE and Cody. We did reach out to the lawyers. No one got back to us. But we did have I should say, use the past tense here. We did have a comment from Dustin Rhodes, who tweeted tweeted something to the effect of, I can't read it anymore because he deleted it. But he said, he quote tweeted a report, someone aggregating our report, by the way, basically say the gist of it is that everybody knows Cody Rhodes is the American Nightmare. Nobody knows Wesley Isold as the American Nightmare, which is not how IP law works. Just because somebody knows you better as some intellectual property name doesn't mean that you get to use it however you want. That's not how the law works, Dustin. And he's deleted it, so maybe he's figured that out. Maybe he's been counseled by Mike Dawkins or something by now.
Yeah, it sounds like that was Jerry McDivitt's argument for the World Wildlife Fund. Everyone knows the World Wrestling Federation is the WWF, right? What you think we're going to change our name? Well, there you go. Maybe we'll get Wesley Isold on the show in the future.
Maybe.
I'd love to chat about this. And Wesley Icehold, who I'm sure has WWE Shop bookmarked, might have gone and scanned the top selling superstars of 2025, which WWE has released. Unfortunately, no figures. I wanted some units sold here attached to each name, no. But we got Alexa Bliss, AJ Lee, CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, Jacob Fatu, Jey Uso, John Cena, Penta, Rhea Ripley, and Roman Reigns. This is not listed as in any particular order.
This is in alphabetical order.
I guess so, yes.
It is in alphabetical order, yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. I think the usual suspects here, if there's any that maybe you see as like overperforming based on kind of their role on television, I think it certainly is I think it's a big plus for Penta, who's kind of, he came in hot and he's sort of like a mid-tier character, but is someone that is selling very well. Alexa Bliss, Jacob Fatu, like, I think
how much was Alexa Bliss on television in 2025?
Up until this tag run with Charlotte, it was like she came back earlier this year, but I wouldn't say she's been a big performing character. And AJ Lee, like, she was back for like 2 weeks and then she disappeared after WrestlePalooza. Like, she's had very, like, of everyone here, she has by far had the least amount of appearances, but it does tell you, like, the return was a big deal for her coming back and being like maybe the biggest hook for that WrestlePalooza show was AJ Lee's return and teaming with Punk.
Yeah. I mean, this is the third year in a row that they've done this. In other years, they did order them in such a way that it gave you the impression that these were the people who were selling the most, whatever it was, revenue or units. But this year, clearly this is, in alphabetical order to, I speculate, I have a subscriber who follows a lot of the meet and greet data where they will list the numbers of meet and greets that have been sold up to this point. Uh-huh. And the subscriber is telling me that information has been more obscured lately relative to prior times. And I have like a cynical thought of like, well, maybe it's, maybe somebody used this kind of information in renegotiating talent contracts or something like that to say, hey, look, I'm providing all this value here. I should get it a little bit better deal than you're offering here. So it's reducing the extent to which talent can understand their value, perhaps.
Well, there is always that argument. I look forward to any Alexa Bliss accounts that will run with Alexa Bliss leads the way in top merch sellers for WWE. That wouldn't be untrue. It'd just be slightly misleading, right?
No. Alexa Bliss is first.
She does lead the list.
WWE's graphic. Yeah.
Alexa Bliss tops CM Punk in listing on WWE Shop, which would not be inaccurate here.
I mean, spatially, that is definitely, geographically, perhaps you could even say that is true.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Rewind Away looks at some of the biggest retirement matches in wrestling history, featuring matches involving Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Sting, and Tam Nakano. Plus, John Pollock and Brandon from New Jersey get together to look back at season 4 of 90210, a season that brought you John Sears, Lucinda Nicholson, David's meth addiction, and Brandon moving in on Kelly Taylor. Book Club will cover This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Plus, we have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322, and so much more. $6 gets you all this at postwrestlingcafe.com. All right. Well, there you have it, everybody. It's now Wednesday, and we still don't have SmackDown numbers. This is just like...
The Torch has them. Would you like to know what they are?
Oh, that's right. The Torch did put out the number. I think it's 1,147,000 viewers. So they did top the million mark after dipping below that last week against Game 6 of the World Series.
Yes. So... back over a million. In fact, more than 100,000 over a million.
The new peak has begun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. We have Blood and Guts tonight. AEW is in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is also a public building, is it not, Brandon?
Oh, it sure is. That's all I'll say.
That's right. The site of Sting's retirement. And yes. That's a warning for inboxes in
the site of a million-dollar gate at Greensboro Coliseum for Sting's retirement. A great show.
We have a super chat here. Jake from the Windy City. Do you think it would be feasible for AEW to attempt to hold a pay-per-view at the Rogers Center, considering the success of All In Texas? So, yeah, we talked about this a little bit. I would, if I was looking at All In as my big stadium event for the year, I don't know if Toronto would be my first destination that I would be choosing. And I think at bare minimum, that's the level of event you would need to run there. But like, let's look at it. They drew, what, 21,000 or so in Texas. You know, I don't know. I don't know if the Rogers Center would be, if it would have to be the right event. And it certainly won't be next year because they've got, they're going back to Wembley Stadium, but maybe down the road they could run a Rogers Center, but I don't see that one happening anytime soon.
Yes. I mean, as far as what their peak is, it's something that we'll learn about next year when we see how they perform at Wembley.
Yes. Which we will look forward to again. Another, oh, yes. Always that is Brandon's big time. Well, when AEW goes to Wembley,
maybe they'll get a Wembley Stadium to agree to a confidentiality clause that causes them to not disclose to the Brent Council what the attendance or turnstile count was.
What has been the toughest geographic location to obtain information from? That is supposed to. Disclose such.
Well, as we discussed, I don't know if suing is the right word. I filed a petition against Las Vegas, as Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority. I've heard I'm not the only one who's had trouble getting information out of them. That is in district court at the state level in Nevada. Washington D.C. by the way, Washington D.C., which is going to host the John Cena retirement match in December. They sent me a letter. They did send me a letter the other day, and I have replied as of this afternoon because they seem pretty resistant to handing over any public information that belongs to the people.
Okay, well, so Vegas would be the toughest, you would say.
DC's gonna see what they can do to give them run for their money, though.
Okay, well, what happens in Vegas doesn't always stay there, okay, when Brandon Thurston's on the case. That's going to wrap up the show, but thank you, everybody, for joining us. We're here every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern time on the WrestleNomics and post-wrestling feeds. I'm going to be back tonight with Wei Ting. We will be live for all post-wrestling cafe members at about 10:35 Eastern following a 2.5-hour edition of Blood and Guts. There's going to be extra blood, extra guts with two versions of the match and then a Falls Count Anywhere match as well on the show in Greensboro. So we're talking about that and then doing a Ask Away mailbag show Thursday again for Post Wrestling Cafe members. So you can sign up postwrestlingcafe.com. Brandon has a lot of great reporting from this past week, a lot of which we went over in the show today, both with records from Lowell, Massachusetts at the Songus Center, covering Bound for Glory, the Wesley Icehold WWE case, reaching a settlement, the Janelle Grant, Carlin Kolker, non-legal dispute.
Bill of Discovery.
So much more. Bill of Discovery that they are going through. So patreon.com/WrestleNomics, the best place to go to be all up to date, and you become the informed wrestling consumer. And maybe you'll be writing a think piece on the merging of the WWE with the Toronto Maple Leafs, the storied franchise.
Yes. Quickly, another legal update. Yesterday, we have no reason to think it didn't happen. Paul Levesque was deposed.
What?
In the WWE merger shareholder lawsuit that has been ongoing since November 2023 or so. Depositions happening fast and furious.
All right. So Unreal Season 2. I look forward to all of these depositions. This is the real Netflix series.
Some things may need to be redacted. Some things may need to be redacted, though. Yes.
This is what we do. All right. So on that note, we're going to say goodbye to everybody. Thank you for tuning in. And that concludes this week's edition of Pollock and Thurston.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.